This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
Yes, so good to be with you again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. Remind those of you listening on radio, you can also hear us commercial-free online and webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. An exciting show for us today. Adam Cohn, who's a clinical associate professor, director of laboratory for additive manufacturing, robotics, and automation at Southern Methodist University, is going to come on a little later on in the program and tell us about 3D printing. There's some things that I thought I knew about 3D printing, and he's filled me in on a whole lot more. Visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our Fountain of Useless Information, and, of course, the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. Right now, I want to get back to Abby Cohut. And Abby's pretty fascinating. She contends that in the future there won't be any need for a resume. It'll all be done online. Anyway, here's Abby.
One thing that's really important is to show passion. And the only way you can show passion is to have passion. And because otherwise we're not going to believe you. So what I would say is, here's an example. Let's say that you want to go work for an airline. You're going to be an engineer at an airline. And you're sitting in the chair, you have the interview, and they say to you, why did you decide to come in today? Your answer should not be, I love the airline. The airline, it's just a wonderful thing. I just love the airport, and I love all this. You know, you have to talk about Southwest Airlines in particular. So you can talk about your passion for the airlines. And I mention this because I have a passion for the airlines, so it's very familiar. So I would say, you know, I'm sitting in your chair because I love everything related to the airline industry. I love pilots. I love flight attendants. I love airports, airplanes. It's my hobby. But the reason I'm sitting in your chair is because you're Southwest Airlines and you're my very favorite airline. I do not fly with any other airlines. That's why I'm sitting in your chair.
Okay.
And that really shows my passion because it's true. Isn't it? Doesn't it sound true?
Yeah. I'd say it does sound true. I remember when I was a kid, my father admonished my brother, who at the time was working for General Motors, and he drove a Dodge. And my father says, you know, you shouldn't have that Dodge parked on the lot there of the General Motors building where you're going into engineering. So
that's good. Yeah, I love that. And here's another tip that you just reminded me of, is that you should wear the colors of the company that you're interviewing for. Because they subconsciously get the message that you're part of the team.
Wow. There's an angle. And that's a subtlety, too. That's something that is not a glaring. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of a little offhand type of thing. A lot of little tricks.
Yeah.
And I guess to thoroughly familiarize oneself with the company when one is going in, too, so one can talk authoritatively about why that particular company may fit the philosophy of the job seeker.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, it's funny because if you went into Walmart wearing a red shirt, they'd probably throw you out. And if you went into Target wearing a blue shirt, they'd probably throw you out.
Mm.
So it's subconscious. The same way you don't want to wear Nikes when you go to a meeting with Adidas.
Yeah.
Same idea.
Yeah, and so the interviewer doesn't like you, but doesn't really know why he or she doesn't like you. It's just a bad impression, and it's just an uneasy feeling. That's interesting, too, the subtleties.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, here's another little tip, is that if you go into an interview and you see that the office is filled with Dallas Cowboys paraphernalia, you should talk about the Dallas Cowboys as soon as humanly possible. The only thing is, because what happens is people hire people they like.
Mm.
And so you know now that the person likes the Dallas Cowboys. The problem is that if you're sitting in someone's office and you don't know whether it's their office, you have to be very careful, because if they don't like the Dallas Cowboys and you start talking about the Dallas Cowboys, that's going to really hurt you. So you want to make sure you're in the right office.
Yeah. If there's no signs of any sports teams or anything in an office, it wouldn't be good to pipe up and say, gee, I love the Washington Redskins, because you don't know where that person's passions really lie. And you're probably going to want to avoid politics, too. You're not going to probably want to be criticizing the president or complimenting the president or congressman or anything else, because you don't know where their political views lie.
That's exactly right. I always tell people to be very careful with sports, religion, and politics, all three.
What about jokes? Is it a good idea to tell a joke or not?
No jokes, but you can be funny. So you could have a dry sense of humor and be sarcastic a little bit. That's okay. But you have to have, that should be your natural, like, I don't know if you could tell that I have one of those, but I would definitely try to be funny during the interview, because that's my natural personality. But if that's not your natural personality, I wouldn't try to do anything different during an interview, because it's already stressful enough.
Well, you're funny in a very clever ways with the words that you use. I think you were complaining about the email monsters, that we're not getting my emails to you in a timely manner, and I thought that
was... Yes, well, the monsters always eat my emails, so yes, I always talk about those monsters.
The monsters always eat your emails. Oh, my goodness. Abby, you got a problem if your monsters are eating your emails.
I know, they're eating them, but they don't eat all of them, just occasionally. So that's what happened with your email. But anybody else can try to send me an email, and we'll see how the monsters do.
What about a follow-up contact after the interview is over with? Is that a good idea, or is that bugging the interviewer?
No, you definitely want to follow up. You want to send a thank you letter to everybody that you interviewed with, and you want to make it personal and memorable.
A handwritten note in the U.S. mail, not an email. Is that right?
Well, no. You can actually go either way. You could go with an email or a handwritten note. The most important thing is to be fast.
Okay. The best gratitude is a prompt gratitude, is what you're saying.
That's it. Yeah, it has to be fast.
Yeah, I remember a quote paraphrase. The great publisher from the last century, Pulitzer, who said that politeness is the cheapest form of capital that we have. I think that's how he put it.
Yeah.
And that if we can give a very prompt and polite thank you, that is the cheapest form of capital that we can possibly get and gets us down the road further.
Yes, definitely. I would totally agree with that.
All right. Well, what have we missed? What are some of the other things that you're going to want to tease us with a little bit at the conference, or are we just about exhausted without giving away all your bag of tricks?
Oh, no. I haven't talked about practically anything I'm going to talk about at the conference, so everybody definitely needs to come and listen to me talk. But one thing that I'm definitely going to talk about is people that don't like to network, people that are afraid to network, and you've got to come, because I'm going to teach you all kinds of ways to do it without being terrified.
Okay, so the fear of networking would also be the fear of appearing in public, I suppose, or engaging people. I remember, I'm telling a terrible story here, but I spent a lot of time in St. Louis, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And St. Louis is a very cold city. In fact, as W.C. Fields made the comment one time, that the worst weeks in show business are Christmas week, Easter week, and a week in St. Louis. And I remember that I would get on an elevator, and everybody just looks straight ahead. No one says anything. It's all very quiet. And you travel the elevator, and it's all very quiet. So I moved to Dallas in 83, and I went out on a business call, and I got on an elevator, and someone looked at me and says, "Hey, how about them Cowboys?" And everybody in the elevator is talking and being friendly, and I just noticed a completely different business atmosphere in Dallas as to what I had found in St. Louis. I don't know that it's still that way, but yeah, there is a fear of networking. There's a fear of speaking up, and I think people get further when they do. I have absolute strangers speak to me all the time when I'm in the grocery store or standing in line somewhere or whatever. A smile and a kind word, I believe, goes a long way, and that's what you're going to be stressing?
Oh, yeah. No, we're going to be talking about how to network at the conference in particular, how to network at all conferences, and just how to network in general. But you got to make it easy for everyone, so you need to not be afraid, because you know what? I'm an introvert also, so it's not easy for me. So when I'm teaching everyone else, I'm going to be teaching myself at the same time.
Well, you certainly don't come across as an introvert. I mean, you really come across as somebody very, very much out there and quite extroverted. So you're able to hide it really good. I want to remind them, the listeners, that it's going to be October 22nd, the Arlington Convention Center. It's called MetroCon, M-E-T-R-O-C-O-N. It's a joint effort of Lockheed Martin and IEEE, and so there ought to be a lot of networking opportunities at the event. You can find out more about the event at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link to MetroCon. And incidentally, absolutely, Abby is. If you want to give your website, Abby.
Yes, well, it's just absolutelyabby.com. However, I have a bonus for your listeners.
Okay.
If they are job seekers, if they go to meetabby.com. So it's M-E-E-T and ABBY.com. They will get a teleseminar on interviewing. It's called Interviewing Ingenuity. And if they go there, they can sign up, get that right before the event, and then they can come meet me at the event.
All right.
And learn more. Yeah.
Meetabby.com. MeetAbby.com. They can get the tips on interviewing and everything else. Did you say?
Yeah, interviewing. That's what it's all about.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. That's great. Well, before we get out of here, do you have a view of the future? Where do you see the future? Is the job opportunities growing? Is America on the right track? What do you see 5 years, 10 years down the line?
Well, I would say 5 years, 10 years down the line, the resume is going away, and it's going to be replaced by social media. So people will have social media profiles, and they'll have videos of themselves. That's what I see is coming down the line. But in the meantime, you got to get your resume done. You got to have good interview skills, and you also have to make sure that you have good social media profiles set up. And I'll be telling people about that during my presentation as well.
Okay, so the future, the resume is going to go away, and it's going to be social media, and there's going to be videos. That means people are going to have to learn how to appear well on camera, and that is a whole nother science altogether. Will you be teaching people lighting and how to work the camera? Because, you know, the camera loves some of us and hates the rest of us. And it's a real hard thing to do to appear well on camera.
Yeah, it's not going to probably be my forte, but you never know what could happen in a few years, what I turn this into. But right now, I'm just teaching people what to say and what to write.
Well, I'm real excited to speak with you. It's going to be lots of fun. Diane said, you know, this is a science program, so Diane said, you know, would you be interested in talking to Abby? And I said, she's going to be at MetroCon? And Diane said, yeah. I said, well, yeah, I said, sure, you know, we're promoting MetroCon. And so Diane says, well, you know, engineers have to find jobs too, so.
I would probably say my word of wisdom is eventually is now. That means sometimes in life you get thrown a curveball and you start going down a different road and you realize it's the wrong road, but it's time now to change it. It's time now to take control of your career and figure out what you really, really want to do, and go for it. There's no time like the present.
Okay. Abby Kuhut, well known on the web as Absolutely Abby. You can go to meetabby.com and get some very valuable information. She's going to be speaking at the Arlington Convention Center October 22nd at MetroCon. And that's a joint effort between Lockheed Martin and IEEE. You can find out more about MetroCon and get a link to their website at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. Abby, thanks so much for being with us today. It's been very valuable information, and we'll look forward to seeing you at VetroCon.
You're welcome, and thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
And you're listening to the Science News Radio Network. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. Well, at this time we have with us Adam Cohn. He's Clinical Associate Professor and Director of Laboratory for Additive Manufacturing, Robotics, and Automation at Southern Methodist University. You're a mechanical engineer, really, aren't you, Professor Cohn?
Well, my training is actually in physics, but I've done a great deal of mechanical engineering in my career and ended up on the faculty at SMU in mechanical engineering.
Well, we're so glad to have you with us. I understand you're going to be making a presentation at MetroCon on the 22nd of October at the Arlington Convention Center. MetroCon has been going on, this is the 28th straight year for MetroCon. And, of course, it's a collaboration of IEEE and Lockheed Martin and a number of other engineering firms. So give us sort of an overview of what we can expect to hear from you when we attend MetroCon.
Well, I'm going to be focusing my talk on 3D printing. And 3D printing, as you know, has become a very popular topic in recent years. A number of years ago, in fact, very few people knew about it. But probably in the last 3 or 4 years, just about everyone has heard of 3D printing. So I'll be providing an overview of the technologies involved, because there isn't just one technology in 3D printing. There are quite a few. And some of the applications that are in use at present and also emerging, and I'll also cover some of the emerging technologies for that matter. And then I will probably turn to a discussion of some of the research we're doing at SMU in my lab to develop some more advanced 3D printing technologies. I think that should more or less fill the time I have at MetroCon.
Okay, good. Now, let's delve in a little bit further to 3D printing. I mean, we see reports every once in a while. Somebody even made a gun that actually fired using 3D printing. It's really just another way of manufacturing, doing it in layers. But you don't have a large choice of materials, do you, that you can call upon for 3D printing?
Well, you're right to some extent. I mean, compared to conventional manufacturing, the choices are limited. However, the choices are growing all the time, and we already have quite a few plastics, quite a few metals that are available. It's also worth recognizing that even though you might be able to print something in a particular material that you may have heard of, like nylon or stainless steel, you don't necessarily get the same properties that you would if you manufactured the part by a conventional method. So you're right. It's limited in materials, though improving all the time. There's still usually enough choice that people can make some useful things.
Well, I didn't dream that you could do any 3D printing with stainless steel. Did you? Was that just kind of thrown in there for our edification, or are there advances that seem as though we will be able to do 3D printing with stainless steel?
Well, no, people are already doing stainless steels and titaniums and tool steels and a number of other metals in the last few years, particularly that. That was an area of 3D printing that really emerged probably 10 to 15 years ago and is currently the subject of a great deal of research, but I don't want to suggest that it's only in academic institutions. There are a number of companies that sell metal 3D printing machines, typically using a high-powered laser to melt a metal powder. And it's being taken very seriously. For example, General Electric is developing the capability of printing production quantities of a fuel nozzle for their upcoming next-generation engine called the LEAP engine. And they hope in a year or two to actually start building tens of thousands of these nozzles, several of which are used per engine, entirely using 3D printing from a material such as stainless steel. I don't know exactly what they're planning to use, but they have a lot of work to do in order to qualify this material, make it establish the the airworthiness of it, if you will, because certainly we don't want a nozzle in an engine to suddenly fail and cause the engine to fail. But people are taking this very seriously, and that's not even to mention the use in medical devices and dental devices of 3D printed metal parts. For example, dental copings and bridges and crowns and things like that that people have been making for a while now and are making in considerable numbers. So metal 3D printing is real. It's out there. It's very difficult to pull it off successfully. It takes a lot of practice and iteration, but it's absolutely a new thing and an important thing.
Well, I can understand with nylon or plastics, you melt it, and of course you're not talking about now using lasers to melt the metal. So I would and the metal powder. So that would mean to say then that the aluminum or the stainless steel or whatever hard substance it was has to be reduced to a powder first, and then when it's printed, it's hit with this laser that melts it into some sort of its mold or layer or something in that manner or fashion, and. But this seems like a very laborious process. If you've got to turn it into a powder before you can manufacture it, why not just mold it in the beginning or extrude it or any number of other ways that we've made things up to now?
Well, because all the other conventional methods you describe require a tool of some sort that has the shape of the part you're trying to produce. 3D printing, on the other hand, is a toolless process direct from CAD design and allows you to make structures essentially directly without any tooling whatsoever. It also allows you to make geometries that are otherwise unmanufacturable, such as very complex internal features that you could never mold or machine, such as cellular type structures that have a lot of holes in them, essentially, to reduce their weight, for example, for an aerospace application. Things that have undercuts as much as you want. And the geometrical freedom that 3D printing offers is one of the main reasons that people are so excited about it. But yes, you're right. The material needs to be powdered in the case of metal 3D printing. In most processes, there's one or two where that isn't the case. That's also true of some of the plastic 3D printing processes, like selective laser sintering, which is used most commonly with nylons, also involves a powdered material. Typically, the particles of these processes are quite small, on the order of 50 microns.
So
there is some cost.
Yeah, well, there's a whole industry then right now of has cropped up in turning materials into powder. Is that it?
Indeed, and you can imagine that the materials are therefore more expensive in that form than they would be in bulk form. And that's part of the issue. I mean, 3D printing has a number of benefits, but it also has some liabilities, and we spoke about material properties limitations. But also the cost can be significant because of the materials cost, because the processes themselves are rather slow and the machines are rather expensive. So, you know, the amortized cost of making a part is actually pretty high. But nonetheless, there are some geometries that make a lot of sense to produce with 3D printing, and the nozzle that I mentioned is certainly one of them. In fact, they were able to, by 3D printing the nozzle, reduce the parts count from about 18 or 20 to 1, and achieve a more efficient design in terms of fuel efficiency, and something that's probably going to be more robust and longer lasting, because it isn't built by combining separate pieces which might actually start to break apart after a while.
Well, this is a whole lot more fascinating than the news stories I've seen where somebody makes a plastic gun. I mean, really, but we're heading for the break of the half hour, and we'll have to pick up on this again in the second half, so please stick around. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind.
Who in the den of strangers will we meet today?
Richard Armitage. Terrorists can't do anything to change our way of life. The real danger to our way of life is how we react to terrorism.